soon as you engage that, it's simple template model, we engage that it's appear to unify at a high scale, and go up approximately 3 × 10^16 J. And then the question I ask is, what does the scale actually tell us? So, what is the significance of n gar? And putting this in the context of, say, string applications, you might ask, are string states, or you could tell, you know, x, y, bosons, or any of the other gar states, are they heavier than n gar? Or lighter than Edgar.
Is there any apparent reason to believe that the unification has to happen on these things, or is that something you have to design in as a? If you make this tool, you design it in the model, but you don't need it.
Yes, I mean, so this is. There's no a priori reason, you have to have a unified theory.
Yeah. And the models that give you the sound model, do they simply give it to you as a subgroup of a bigger group, or is it coming by those biggest products?
It's something like accepting brain setups, then you never get it as a subgroup of a kind of gut structure.
Yeah.
Because it's accepting brain setups. Anything like enterotic or F-theory or something, then you've got underlying gut structures.
Yeah.
So then you have, I mean, stringy guts are always slightly different field theory guts, both in how the gut breaking is done. Yeah, so I mean, field theory guts also have these, like, whatever, 126 representations, something to break,
right,
the gut break, but yeah, that doesn't happen in string theory. So you got slightly different gut breaking guts. But, you get lots of string theory guts to do it. And then, and then if you assume that this scale is telling you something, then you have a straightforward question as string states, are they heavier than NGAR, are they at NGAR, or are they lighter than NGAR? Why should one care? Well, the most obvious reason to care is, so, it's if you have a number of normalizable operators, and questions like, proton decay, then these depend on how fast the proton decays depends on how heavy the mass of the heavy states are, and this all ties us basically to what does this scale actually tell us. So this question is why threshold corrections are important topic to study. Essentially because in a stringy context, this is what we're answering, stringy threshold corrections to gauge coupling running are basically telling you how to interpret the scale NGAR with relation to, say, the Planck scale or the string scale.
So the context for this is that the Kaluza Klein scale is going to be at least an NGAR. Is that the picture?
This is the thing we don't know a priori.
But will your analysis that you're going to think you're going to tell us, are they going to assume that, or are you going to allow yourself to have this mass level very well?
So the idea is that this is what we want to discover. What is the Kaluza Klein scale, what is the string scale with relation compared to this scale then go? So in the context of string models, if you see, given that there is a scale in the gut of nature, what does that tell you about where, say, the Kaluza Klein scale is, where the string scale is?
But in practice, the reason it's logarithmic, even though there's actually measures of these things living in our brains, is that the running is the charged particles are seeing four dimensions for the gut scale. Is that whenever you have a gut framework, is that done in the context where the particles in the loops that are giving you the logarithm are all living in four dimensions?
So in a string thing, you're going to sum over all the states that are.
I guess the language is just that if you're not four dimensions and the gauge fields are not four dimensions, then it won't be locker than the recent power law because the gauge fields have some mass. And so does that ever happen? Or is that
I think I mean, probably, I think probably it does. I mean, so it would be model dependent. Great question. I mean, if you have a string model which is lots of supersymmetry, then then that's going to kind of highly constrain. You have extra dimensional supersymmetry, so you've got lots of extra supersymmetry, but that needs to shut off.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not engineering that kind of stuff again.
Okay, and the other restriction I want to basically make is to the class of local models, which used to be put as, say, a standard model lives on the brain. So we have this basic picture. So the standard model is also either on a singularity or on a collapsing cycle. But basically, the standard model lives in a very small region. The standard model is pretty free to live in a very small region of space inside a large bulk. And the bulk has a volume V, which I'm going to be interested in, since I think it's in the limit where V is very much greater than 1, because this is a limit in which you get very interesting physics. And also, you've got basically a parameter that you can control, so you can think about things in a reasonably important way. So, also, basic definition of local, that the Yukawas are determined by local geometry. And not the code. So, practice.
What is that? Yeah. Isn't it a bit of a strong assumption for these models? I mean, for like intersecting two-brain models, you have a couple things typically are sort of determined by the global term.
Yes, yes. So, for intersecting D-brains, intersecting D6 brains, for example, they are not local models. Yeah. So, what I'm going to say doesn't apply to those. The reason for the restriction for these is, so first of all, in the scenario of like moduli stabilization, you're kind of forced to this, to basically have this picture where you have to have the standard model in a very small region. It also ties into recent things, things like the left theory guts and so on, which also have this basic picture where you've got a local construction. And the interesting thing about local models, essentially, because you've got this parameter V which you can make really, really large, this gives you, you can kind of isolate the effects of this parameter, and then you get interesting, well, as we'll see, you get some interesting properties from that. And you can't do that with global models, essentially everything's sort of tied up with everything else. Okay, so once the content of this statement that the Yukawas are determined by local geometry is that the physical Yukawas relate to potential Yukawas by the overall Kähler potential and then the magnetic terms. The overall Kähler potential depends on the overall volume, minus 2 log volume. The superpotential Yukawas do not depend on the volume because of the holomorphic reasons. And so, the fact that physical Yukawas do not depend on volume tells you that the magnetic kinetic terms should scale as 1 over volume to the 2/3, so that y alpha beta gamma is not a function of volume. So this is basically e to the k over 2 gives us 1 over volume. So this gives 1 over volume, and then we want to cancel off this 1 over volume against this factor, which constrains these two. It's with a mild assumption that the different local fields see the bulk volume in the same way, that this just has to scale as 1 over volume to the 2/3.
I mean, you make it sound like you're doing something, but what you're saying is that this is what happened, and this you're giving an argument. It's a simple way to see why the 5 fantasy Z is what it is.
Yes. Okay. So, although this so far doesn't really look like we've got any information to say anything, we can actually now get quite a surprising result. Okay, so, the form of threshold corrections is significantly constrained by the Kaplan-Ewing formula, which is the generalization to supergravity of the NS VZ beta function. And what this proof does is it relates physical and holomorphic gauge couplings. So holomorphic gauge couplings are the ones which have nice non-normalization terms, and physical gauge couplings are the ones that we actually measure and we care about in threshold corrections. So let me just write this down. So here's the formula. So let's see what we have. So okay, on the left, this is what we care about, or what we measure. This is the NSV zeta, and so this is a function of. And so this whole equation should be understood recursively. In that here's that this depends on the physical coupling, this also depends on the physical coupling. This is a one loop correction, so yeah, you have the tree level, you can solve for the tree level, then you substitute back in, you get one loop, then you carry on the process. So this is essentially a recursive equation for the physical gauge couplings. On the right hand side, we have the holomorphic couplings. Here we have ordinary beta function running. Here we have the effects of the kinetic anomaly. And this part is the effect of the K bar.
Right, you explained this to me yesterday, so those names I don't recognize, but what you're saying is that the NSVZ and the NSHI and the NOLA, those are all to do with supergravity normalizing the various second A3 and the third.
Yes. So this term comes from going basically from the superspace from this to this. So canonically normalizing the vector superfields.
There's a trace anomaly and that's it.
And the Kanishi comes from going from canonically normalizing the kinetic terms of the matter fields. And the K-vial comes from going from canonically normalizing the metric. So So these are the three anomalies that are all essentially contributing to this relationship between physical and people, which you measure holdorf couples, which satisfy nice number normalization things. Okay, so this equation is rather deep because it contains more information than it really has got any right to actually know. Are there any questions about this equation before I go on?
Are you going to talk about the issue of masses?
You're trying to get me to charge. No, I'm not going to talk about illumination at all.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't understand that.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Yes.
Why do you have a problem with that knowledge in the theory?
Why
can you have a knowledge in the theory and it still makes sense? Aren't you supposed to not have any knowledge?
So you can't have gauge anomalies in theory. But there are anomalies, like the Chiral anomaly, for example, which is a good classical symmetry, it's broken quantum mechanically.
Okay, so those are all non-fixed.
Yeah, these are all associated basically with just, rescaling fields. Okay, so why can you do something, get more information than you should be able to out of this? Okay, so basically let's think about where the volume can enter this equation. Okay, well the volume can't enter here. Because this is a local model, so the holomorphic coupling we're just depending on the local quantity. Yeah. So, and we know that, and there are constraints on how the volume model is prepared in holomorphic quantities, so the volume model just wasn't prepared here. P doesn't make sense here. The term here, so V certainly enters here, V enters through the Kähler potential. But this is a known, how this enters is known, because we know the overall Kähler potential, it's minus 2 over volume. Here are the matter terms, so again V enters, but using just the argument of locality over there, we said that we also know how V enters here. So then one thinks about it, one realises that actually everything on the right hand side, we know how volume enters. So this means that we should then be able to just put in these expressions for the volume and see what we get. And that this should be, and there basically doesn't seem to be any room to manoeuvre in this expression. So and I will also say that because we want to isolate the effects of basically being local, we can consider the limit V very much greater than 1 and look at terms that are leading in. So we're just going to focus on the overall volume modulus and extract the data. So what we then get. So I'm going to drop the NXVZ term because it's subleading for everything that I'm going to consider. So I'm not going to do that. Minus 2 log volume there, and we can re-express volume as m Planck squared over m string squared. So on the right hand side we've just got an expression that involves, so these depend on the various matter representations, but this we can just rearrange, and it turns out that this term and this term actually combine to give something which is a proportional beta function. And when the dust settles, this is just rearranging this expression, you find that what this expression gives and so we can write this as okay, so what's surprising here is that basically just using the expression for the using the dependence on the volume, which we think we can deduce basically purely by locality. You substitute in this expression relating physical and holomorphic dynamics, and what you get is basically some sense that the physical couplings should look like the tree level couplings ran down from a one scale of the winding strings, i.e. a scale which is parametrically above the string scale.
How did you get
The first line had coefficients that were not just all BAs, and then the second line where you got RMS squared only had BAs in it. What was the...
Going from here to here.
Yeah, what was really out of BAs?
Okay, so this is two... Okay, so basically this is something like 2NATA minus T of G over 16 pi squared... bulk volume. This part here is 4 over 3 NATA over 16 pi squared log volume. And if these are, and if I've got the sign correct, then these will add up to 2/3 NATA minus 2 T of G. And then this is basically, this is 2/3 on some NATA minus 3 T of G. And this is the Ricci function coefficient. So it's basically it's just algebra going from here into here and being keeping care of the signs.
And there was also you had the freedom to have non-log independence. If k has if you have the minus 2 log b, that's the whole k, right? There's also plus a non, you know, the k function for all the other
things. Yes.
Also there, but that has a logarithm. Multiplying
it. So there's like log of dilch on log of construction, which like.
And that's all in 1 over d naught squared.
So this is basically what I'm extracting here is dependence, the behavior on the overall volume. Because the point is that because you're in the limit where I make the volume large, this is the parameter that's large.
Right.
So I can isolate the effects of, the aim is to isolate the effects of having a local model with a large bulk volume. And yeah, and there will be additional corrections that depend on say construction, which lie or dilaton or something like that. But those aren't going to become large in the limit where I make this the volume really, really large. And then the interesting thing, the surprising thing, is that in the limit where you make the volume really, really large, what you see effectively the couplings are running from the or appear to be running from the winding scale rather than the string scale. Whereas naively, you'd expect couplings to run from the string scale, because in string theory, you think the string scale is the scale which gives you, basically sets your ultraviolet scale. And also, the only information that we seem to really have used here is, you know, is very simple information about locality. And the fact we have a low energy supercomputing expression. So the surprising thing is that this scale is appearing against the winding scale rather than the strength scale. And then what we want to do is investigate this in strength theory and to see, basically, is this actually true? And if so, why it's true?
How long gut is related to string and string?
So
original question was how long gut is related to string, so what is the answer now?
So what this is suggesting is that the scale, if you say where the couplings, if this is unified across gauge couplings, then this what this would be saying is that this scale is the radius of the bulge space times M string.
Okay, so
it's
M winding is M gut,
yes. So the M winding would be M gut.
Okay.
And the M string would be here, and in fact would be about 10 to the 15.
Where's the number?
Sorry. M string is M Planck over square root of volume. M winding is M Planck over volume, which is about 1/3. So if this is M gut, then volume to the 1/3 would want to be about 100. So volume to about 10 to the 6. So square root of volume to around 10 to the 3. And so...
Is this volume the same one you wanted to be 10 to the 15 yesterday?
So in the large volume models, if you want to have a TUV of gravity units, then you need the volume to, then you want volume to be 10 to the 15. So, I mean, the large volume models always have this tension with gut unification.
Oh, yeah. Which? The Klutz-Klein scales by whatever, right? It's
the bulk Klutz-Klein scale is M string over R, which is M factor.
That's much below the. So now I come back to the original question. So the logic of this formula is that if I had a four-dimensional supergravity, then this is the way to help the vector on. But in this picture, why is it that you must be making assumptions about where the gauge fields live in the string construction to know that this is a valid level?
So the basic assumption you made is locality.
But more than that, I mean, if they, or maybe that's the same thing. So we're.
So, for example, there aren't any KK excitations of the whole bulk which are charged under the standard bulk nature.
But suppose that local area was warped down to some very small scale. Is that
well, I think warping goes beyond. Warping does funny things, obviously, to the K.
If I remember right from what you were telling me last summer, I shouldn't think about this as four-dimensional running all the way up to the scale I want.
Yes, so this is an effect. This is an effect.
This looks like I've run four-dimensionally from that winding, but I really haven't run four-dimensionally.
Yes.
It's just that's the effect that the scale
is occurring. Yeah. I mean, the supergravity theory in which it's working is a low-energy theory, which is applying below all the plates.
So this computation you're actually doing at low scales?
Yes.
And
then
just, yeah.
So when the stakes, supposing I wanted the gauge field to live in the bulk in a region around where you've got your hash area. And the point is
you want the gauge field to live right here.
Somewhere which is in the class of things you're thinking about, but I wanted to actually see the bulk, so it's some brain wrapping, some cycle down where your center bulk is. So your assumption whatever is that whatever's going on there, that cycle did not scale with the volume as the volume got large. That's your local assumption.
Yeah.
But so in terms of the now relative Planck mass, what would be a typical Planck scale for something like that? That's not just going to scale like that.
I mean, if it's one of these cycles, then it would be M Klutz-Klein local would be M string over the local radius. And if you identify basically this the fourth power, using the fourth power of this with the alpha gut, then this would be something like M string over alpha gut, which is 1/4, or -1/4, or -1/4.
So that's something like 1 over the square root of the volume.
the volume of this ripple. If you have a small force cycle here, it's going as the fourth power.
But if I think at the end of the day, if I go back and relate the Planck scale, that's like one of those. That's something which is like,
that's like M Planck over square root of the voltage.
So now if I think about the running of a gauge coupling like that, you know, in some Wilsonian sense, it seems like there's going to be a range of scales above the strings. So the string scale sounds like that's the, you could design this so that there's a range of scales between that Kaluza Planck scale, the local one, and this wavelining scale, right? And if I imagine asking in that Wilsonian picture where I'm in the higher dimensions, asking how the gauge coupling ran, I wouldn't expect it to run logarithmically because it's a higher dimensional gauge coupling. So
what it was that this analysis is completely four dimensional. In principle, this analysis doesn't know anything. You know, this loop parity theory doesn't know anything about fluid supply modes, string theory, or anything of that nature.
Yeah, that's what bothers me a little bit. So the assumption is
the assumption that was went into getting that form of the supergravity theory was basically locality, saying you have this parameter volume such that the physical Yukawa couplings don't depend.
Does this argument exclude, could I take your argument from it, exclude the possibility that the couplings in this higher dimensional regime are running power on the scale?
Because this theory is a four-dimensional one, using this, I don't want to be saying anything about.
But in principle, if I had been gone, I'd calculate everything, and I would just think I'd do this integral through the higher dimensional region, and I'd get some matching conditions, which I would then use to match out of that. And that would be telling me about the mu dd mu is telling me how things run in the four-dimensional part, but the constant in that running was the matching condition that I got from the higher dimensional theory. And so the message I'm getting from you is that if I was worried about things running in some non-logarithmic way, I would have gotten dependences on mass scales in that higher dimensional picture that were volume dependent as an integration constant to my renormalization group in the lower dimensional theory. And you're saying that whatever that was, those masses had to be coming in a specific logarithmic way that organized itself in this way, because of things you already say you know about the four dimensions. So you're saying that if I can use that to learn something about how things run in the higher dimensions, there's nothing wrong with that as far as you can see. It sounds like that's it.
Yeah. I think I agree with you, but
okay.
I'm not.
So if I found something that was inconsistent, that would have to mean that's one of these other things is inconsistent, right? That something fundamental is failing and not some model detail.
So let me say, so I think, okay, so the thing, all this is, the formula gives a result which looks odd.
Yeah.
So the thing to do is basically investigate the string theory. And then to actually, because if you have some concrete string examples, you're really gone for Kelly, you have another trial existence
right.
theory, you have a theory which makes sense, and you can just look and see whether you get this behavior, and if you do get the behavior, then what's the fundamental reason for it? So that's then.
Sorry, I'm a bit confused. Can you clarify where this Kaluza Klein modes, string modes are in this formula? Like, if you're saying that M got higher than M string, so I have a whole tower of string states, and where they are here?
In which
term?
They're not there. And the reason they're not there is because this is the formula of the low energy supergravity.
That's right. Then why do you trust it? Once you cross to this dashed line, you cannot trust it anymore.
So we're doing the theory is defined here, and what it's telling you is if you look at if you measure the couplings here and see how they run here at these energy scales, what you would find is the scale which they would appear to unify at. The energy scale defined by where they unify would correspond to the mass scale of winding string modes. I'm not saying that that this is giving you this picture, what's going on here, is giving you an operational meaning for if you were to scatter states at this energy scale, that would be a physically sensible thing to do.
No, I'm not scattering any states. I was just wondering why the string states do not contribute to running if you go to so high energies. I'm probably confused. Why are you just looking at? I don't understand.
Well, it sounds like you were about to tell us the string picture that underlies this.
And I think Joe, you were about to.
Maybe
you can. Oh, I was just gonna ask if I was also confused on this one. So just to make sure I understand the logic. Logic is you calculate the physical couplings, and this 1 over G naught squared I should think of is also being including the normal running of that you would compute in the MSSM with the MSSM data functions. And the statement is that beta functions are, you know, the MSSM runnings are already converging at some point. And so the only way to make those converge, and also including this correction, everything converges for this M winding equals that I've gotten, that's all you're saying.
Yeah, so that if so this, which in string theory is typically something like say S or something or dit or something. So that if this term here, which is universal across the three standard model gauge couplings, then the only way for those, if they are going to converge, then they converge at this scale.
Yeah. So if I understand the statement, you have an extra correction in addition to the MSSM beta functions that are already computed and seem to converge. And if you want to believe that unification is something that survives even in the face of this correction, then it has to be the two-scale of the same.
Yes.
This is the reason. And now, this is all low-energy argument, not saying anything about blue supply and holes.
Yeah. I mean, it's strictly working in the low-energy.
Okay. And the reason you learned something was that normally you wouldn't have expected that you'd hit this G-naught would have been something, which is telling you what everything that happens at higher scales than where this description started would have been buried in the G-naught, but you're saying that you actually know something with volume.
So yeah, we know that the volume can't appear.
Yeah, so you can organize the calculation to say that if I take all the volume dependence and clip it in that matching and I stick it in the logarithm, the first miracle is that the coefficients were always these b's. And then, since it is always these b's, you can interpret that as being a scale of the log and that's the scale that you get.
Yeah.
Well, so these b's are the same as the MSSM.
These are the same things.
Ah, okay, I forgot this. Okay, so you really are just shifting up. Okay.
Yeah. So it's not true. Yeah. So the definite non-trivial thing is that basically this term and this term.
I see.
Yeah, add together to give you.
I forgot this.
Yeah, something which is the same.
You're making a point that's not just to add the effect theory, right? You're just, this is something which is any theory in this category, if I identify running, the volume dependence is always going to organize itself in this.
Yes, exactly. I mean, in general unification, things are less, or sometimes things are less interesting because if this term is just
as a difference,
it's just difference between all the gauge couplings. Yeah, then any disagreement, any extra term that you have here, you could just reabsorb. Yeah, because you don't know the better couplings.
Sure, but you're still making it more general. If I could think of any observable at all to do with the running, you're going to make the same statement. So it's just this unification is a particularly nice statement to apply to. But there's nothing in this board on the right. Charitable unification. Right? You're organizing the volume. You're saying that normally you know mu dv mu of g, but you're saying I also know v dv of g, and it happens to organize itself in this way that if I can put it all inside that one.
Yeah, but I mean, so if you get the unification, you could just shift things by log. You could shift the bare couplings by log m winding over n straight.
But you can't do it in volume dependent ways. Right? That's your message. That the volume dependent.
Well, that. But if you've got three different numbers here. You don't know what those numbers are.
But if I ask how they scale with
volume,
you're talking about the dots.
I'm sorry, I'm still confused. If M got were smaller than N string, then I understand the logic. String states are heavy, we drop them off the ineffective theory, blah, and we can go up to M got and study this. If it's vice versa, string states should be in the picture. You cannot really talk just about running using degrees of freedom of standard model MSSM. You should really, they should kick in. Where string states should kick in this regime? After you cross this M string, I think because you interchanged where MS and MGAT are now, they should be there. They are not according to you.
Yeah, so if you were actually doing experiments at this scale, then string states would be there, string states would be important. The same is, if you're doing experiments just down here, where none of these states are present, and you look at how the couplings behave, I mean, the scale you infer from measurements down here is a scale which physically corresponds to a scale higher than the string scale. I mean, by MGUT, we always just mean, MGUT just means here, scale,
okay.
You look at the couplings.
So you're just saying, I am still only looking at degrees of freedom contained in MSSM, and asking within that restricted sector of theory of how would you see this? But it's not really physically what's going on. Okay.
It's, yeah, it's not. Yeah.
I don't understand
what
you're saying.
Yeah. Okay, so then plan is to basically look at the instructor. Just try and understand this. And so to do this, the idea is you basically want a model where you can actually do the full string computations and actually work out what's happening. So what we will look at are models of D3 brains on orbfold singularities, because these are computable and you can actually do string computations and they have non-zero beta functions. So how will we do the computation? Well, we'll use the background field method. What's this? Well, the term we're interested in, the Lagrangian, is this term. And so if we put a term on the background magnetic field for negation fields, then this we get a vacuum energy that's proportional to b squared. And so the one loop coefficient of 1 over g squared, which is what gives us the threshold corrections, running couplings, comes from the one loop vacuum energy that's proportional to b squared. So the strategy is compute the quantized string spectrum. Once we've computed the spectrum, compute the vacuum energy, which is lambda 0 plus a term that goes over as b squared, plus terms that are all like b to the 4. And this term here gives the threshold corrections. Or one can extract the threshold corrections from this term. So this is the approach. So vacuum energy in string theory, the one in vacuum energy, is found by just adding up the torus, the Klein bottle, and the Möbius strip. Only the annulus and the Möbius strip diagrams can depend on the magnetic field, because only open strings couple to, or only open strings have gauge charges. And so only the annulus and the Möbius strip contribute to its amplitude. And we further focus on cases with just an annulus diagram. So this leads us to D3 brains, torque fold singularities. And let me say, so I'm not going to go through the details. If you've got a background magnetic field, you can just quantize the string exactly. And if you can quantize the string exactly, then you can compute the spectrum.
And the Möbius strip is being predicted. That's why you're in an orbital point, is to get rid of the Möbius strip?
Well, that's an orbital point, because if we just have a D3 brain in flat space, we don't have any beta functions, so we don't have any interesting. We'll get rid of the Möbius strip by just putting D3 brains on orbifolds rather than the D3 brains on orbifolds. So to the Möbius strip needs an orbifold. And so the case of focus is D3 brains on C3 mod Z4. So the quiver is and spectrum. So spectrum is basically arrows stretching from one node to the other are in fundamentals at the first node and in anti-fundamentals at the second. So for example, there are two chiral fermions in the N0, N1 bar representation, two in the N1, N12 bar representation, and yes, and then there's one in the N0, N2 bar, one in the N2, N0 bar. And this script encodes all the matter content of the theory. And it's also the case that an anomaly cancellation tells you that N0 has to be N2 and N1 has to be N3. Basically, the number of lines going into any one point has to be equal to the number of lines going out.
So what's the symmetry on this dish here?
N=1. And the beta function of N0 is -3 N0 plus over all the open string spectrum. Where Q is an exponential of the world sheet parameter. So Q is basically, you have this annulus, and Q is the world sheet, which is basically just taking you, carrying you round the loop and back to where you started. And the theta is the, this is imposing the orthogonal projection. So this imposes the orthogonal projection, and it acts on, it takes zi to 2 pi I theta I zi, where each individual angle is 1/4, 1/4, minus 1/2 for the Z4 orbital function. And the super trace is the sum over bosons minus the sum over fermions. Okay, so in doing this, in evaluating this, there are four terms entering here. So the one insertion is essentially in n=4 sector. The theta and theta cubed insertions are essentially n=1 sectors. And the theta squared insertion goes by the name called an n=2 sector. And this is because the twists these correspond to are 1, 1, 1, essentially 1/2, 1/2, -1/2, and 1/2, 1/2, 0. And these twists essentially correspond to n=1, n=2, or n=4 supersymmetry. Okay, please ask questions if you want about this, because this, yeah, I'm skipping, getting a little fast slide, but the...
To make sure I'm parsing it, then you did 1 second, you said what you said was a half, minus a half, but what you wrote was a quarter, minus a half.
Sorry, this should be a quarter, minus a half, but these things should sure be add up, basically. So one can basically just carry out these traces. over and you're tracing over the string spectrum. And if one does this, one finds that lots of stuff matches. And what one finds is that the n equals 4 part, where you just have a 1 inserted, you get 0, which is no real surprise. The n equals 1 parts, where you have theta and theta cubed insertions.
Where is the b buried in that formula?
The b is buried in the spectrum. So the string spectrum depends on the All right, I'm just basically telling you what the answers are. Give you jimmies. The n equals one sector gives a term which depends on n0 minus n2. And this, in fact, vanishes for if you have a nominally capped section. So slightly surprisingly, this contribution just disappears. And the n equals 2 term gives you basically a term proportional to b squared, a term proportional to this sum, which is the beta function of the gauge group, and then times the product of theta functions.
Are you dropping higher powers of b? Or this
I'm dropping higher powers of b.
So you just focus on the b squared.
Yeah, because then the b squared term gives you b. Times the product of theta functions. The product of theta functions, in fact, evaluates to 1. Through one of these identities, giving an overall answer for summing up all of the sectors for these diagrams of okay, so a common why this sector just reduces to this theta function sum, which is the sum over all the string oscillators, just basically decouples and gives you unity, which is just the contribution from the massless modes. So this comes from the fact that this twist essentially preserves n equals 2 supersymmetry, and in n equals 2 supersymmetry, only BPS modes can contribute to running gauge couplings.
Just make sure there are too many 2s in that last formula.
Just saw that.
Yeah. Where'd the 1/2 come from?
Probably H. Okay. H. Yeah. So, yeah, within n equals 2 sector, only BPS states can contribute to running gauge couplings. And string oscillators are not BPS. So the theta function sum, which is essentially the sum over all the string oscillators, has to cancel, because states which aren't BPS can't contribute to running gauge couplings. And so the only ones which are left are the massless nodes, which is why we end up string local, purely local computation, with this expression.
So why is it true that only the BPS states can contribute?
Why it's true, I'm not sure. It's a fact about n equals 2 supersymmetry.
Is it field theory fact or is it string theory fact?
I think it's field theory fact. So, is there any other questions?
So this is divergent.
This is divergent. This is divergent both in the limit t goes to 0 and also in the limit t goes to infinity. Okay, so there are these two divergences. one in the limit t goes to 0, and one in the limit t goes to infinity. Now, the two limits of the angle of amplitude, one corresponds to the IR, and one corresponds to the UV. So the amplitude ends up looking like this. So, and I've written 0 as 1 over infinity squared, because the way t appeared in the original integral is e to the minus pi t m squared. So t you should interpret as basically 1 over a mass scale squared. So, and I've written the IR divergence as 1 over mu squared, where mu we think of as a very, very low scale. So the limit t goes to infinity is a physical divergence. This is an IR divergence in complicated theory, and this is just fine. We know how to understand this. The t goes to 0 divergence is bad. This is bad, as in the UV, string magic is meant to give you finite amplitudes. String theory is not meant to have divergences in the ultraviolet. So, what's happening here? Well, why has this divergence occurred? Well, if we think about the annulus diagram, then there's a one-loop diagram which looks like this, and then the t goes to 0 limit. You can think of this as diagram as looking like this. And this has a much more intuitive reinterpretation as a closed string chakra. So this is sourcing a closed string, which is propagating through the vacuum, and is then being reabsorbed. So what this divergence is telling us is that there's actually a tap hole in theory, and there's a tap hole in the closed string section. And we know through string theory you have to cancel tap holes, so the theory isn't finite and isn't a consistent string theory unless you cancel all the tap holes. But where is this tap hole coming from? Well, if you think about an orbifold, a Z4 orbifold, where you twist one quarter, one half, and then in the n equals 2 sector, the effective twist is 1/2, 1/2, 0. And what it says is that in the closed string sector, there's a closed string mode, which is partially twisted. It's tied to the fixed point in each of the first two planes, but on the third plane, it's capable of propagating out into the bulk. It's not fixed in the third plane. And so what this is a signal of is that the string theory, the purely local string theory, has a tap hole. It's got a tap hole which can basically propagate off into a two-dimensional space. And the logarithmic divergence we're getting here is corresponding to a logarithmic divergence for a Green's function in two dimensions, which is just propagating off into, yeah, so you've got basically a source of charge in two dimensions, which is like this. Okay, so we sourced a model sources a local tadpole which propagates into the bulk. And in a consistent theory, this tadpole has to be cancelled. There's no option about that. So you need, in consistent theory, you have the orbifold singularity, you need some bulk frames which are cancelling the tackle, which are also charged under the this tackle that we sourced. And then the point is basically that there are also world trees, such as this, which contribute to this one loop diagram. So these world sheets also contribute in the one loop diagram. And these involve massive winding open string stacks. Which are masses, roughly, are the radius of the bulb times the string scale. And these world sheets are necessary to obtain finites. But such states only contribute for t less than 1 over r ms squared. Because all states enter the Cartesian function as e to the minus basically t times their mass squared. So when you have these states stretching from the brain out to the outer electricity, out into the bulk, such states have masses of this winding scale, and so they enter a Cartesian function like this, and this only starts becoming significant when t is much smaller than 1 over rms squared. And this is deep in the UV region of the diagram. And these are the states that make this integral finite. So I'm going to do this explicitly. So that if you have a contact model, where in addition to having D3 grains at the origin, which gave originally the singularity engagement we're interested in, if we also have tadpole cancelling brains on the third torus, then, and we repeat the computation, then what we obtain is take is this sum. And so the sum here is basically over winding modes that are going either like this, or can be going all the way around and coming back to the brain. But the point is that because we have these states, and these for large t are irrelevant because they've always got an extra number up here, but for small t these contribute. And this is finite in the limit t goes to zero. And in fact, the divergence becomes, so this diagram then evaluated, gives basically b0 log r ms squared over mu squared, and scale RMS is basically coming from how heavy is the first excited state. So maybe I should push it over two. How heavy is this first one state that's reaching from here to the tadpole cancelling? Right. And so the string computation has also given an effective UV cutoff of R times the string scale rather than MS. As the one loop string diagram involves is the ultraviolet scale, not the string scale, so the winding scale as well.
So this
state is giving the string each reproduction of this field theory result, and then we're getting exactly the same scale that we encountered using the supercharging lenses.
Make sure I understood. So you're saying that if I had just had that emitter, if I didn't really worry about the cutoff, then I would not have had the flying dependence that you're looking for in the log. Because that flying dependence came from this thing, which is canceling the ultraviolet hertz, and it was the finite part of this log, but this thing, which is pretty hearing that flying dependence.
Yes, so this thing, the purely local computation, gives something that is just ultraviolet divergent.
Yeah, but flying dependent.
But it's volume dependent, but ultraviolet divergent.
So that makes it sound like, so that, and this is probably, actually, probably shouldn't be surprising, but just, so then that's saying that the implicit in the local construction was that things that were far away were irrelevant. And in this particular case, they weren't irrelevant. They were as big as what we kept, and they were important to keep because they were making the versions work. And if it had been true, you could organize things in terms of condition for an operation, probably isn't true. But if you're thinking in that language, then it's, I guess it's not a surprise to think that logarithmic is mask and see masks everywhere, see everything. But that kind of raises the bigger question. So do you know systematically when this intuition is failing, when distant brains are...
Yes, so from a closed string point of view, it's kind of, you know, the intuition is tragic. So if you have a stack of brains living in some local model, and now locally, you can look at the R of the Rondon charges, not Rondon brackets, and you can say, are all the charges cancelled? Now, what we had here was that locally, in fact, they weren't cancelled. There was a cycle, a two-cycle, which was basically heading off into the bulk, and these brains carry charge under that two-cycle. So they're sourcing a tadpole, which is not cancelled locally. But for consistency, it's cancelled globally. And so the basic intuition here for why this is happening and when it will happen in general is that when you have a local model, but which sources a tadpole locally, but that tadpole, but locally, you can't tell whether it's actually, the theory is globally inconsistent. So until you know whether the theory is globally inconsistent, you basically have to have a divergence.
So if someone hands me a local model and I go through and I count all the charges that could have been flexed coming out of that local region and they're all zero, then you'd be saying that it's safe to ignore everything that's not nearby.
Yeah.
And if you look at the local models, is that confident?
Sure. So it's pretty common that they don't some stuff. So for example, you know, so one application to this, you know, you look at these models of kind of these local F theory guys. So the way the hypercharge ranking works there is that you have some local model with various cycles, and you turn on a magnetic flux. So you turn on a hypercharge flux in a two-cycle that is locally non-trivial, but it's globally trivial. So what it's saying is that you've got cycles, maybe it's doing something like this. And if you look at it locally, you think this is, you know, this could be a real cycle of a Calabi out. And if you turn on flux on this, you can induce through the Chern Simons terms of the brain action, you can induce a real tadpole that would render the theory just genuinely inconsistent. Now that isn't true, because in fact globally this cycle doesn't exist. It's not a global cycle. So globally it's trivial. But locally, the theory doesn't yet know it's consistent. And the reason it doesn't even know it's consistent because without getting out into the bulk, you don't know that this cycle isn't a cycle. So then the theory has to have analyzed purely locally. The theory has to have the divergence. So this is then precisely the same structure that we have over here. And so precisely the same analysis.
How do you limit the damage? Because so in these kind of things, there's some physics that's playing an important role at the level of things that are happening. And do you have a sense enough if I go on to calculate various phenomenological things with these local models? Do you have a way of sorting which of those predictions are not going to be proved by this physics that I have to conclude?
I'm not sure, so I thought everything like you call a couple, it's all completely local.
So then why is that? Because it affects the first level of its dimension 4, so that it gets longer 50 minutes of that
passes. Okay, so at the level of how of where it runs from, so you're thinking in terms of thinking you're running Q-Cola couplings, then then I'd expect that also to depend on this question. Because the whole running thing is, where do you start running from? You say naively you start running from the string scale, but in practice you start running from the scale which theory is consistent. It's known to be consistent. And in these models where you have local tab poles, which counts as global, the scale at which you know the theory is consistent, it isn't just this scale here. It's you have to really include states that are doing this in order to know that the theory is consistent.
But it's not running, right? It's kind of the running is in a four, it's as if it was in a four-dimensional world. Which is not. So that's why I'm kind of trying to understand what the rules are. I guess if you're looking at superposition properties, those are likely to be safe in some distance sense that you can still keep things attributed to people probably anywhere you can.
Yeah, well, when superposition is on one, don't make sense.
When you're talking about running over there, you talk about like you're thinking of the theory of function stuff.
Can you check your microphone just to see if I'm ready? Can you check to see if it's on? That's what you're doing.
Oh, the fuck. Yeah, it's all right.
It's kind of late, but I just got...
No.
Glad that you have a forceful voice.
At that point, because we just...
turn the mic on, and then we'll talk as if you have just... So is it true that you said that?
In the F-theory models, is it necessary that let's suppose you didn't turn on any kind of hypercharge models. I would imagine that you still have the same kind of problem with these tadpoles, right? Because the seven brains are wrapping internal cycles, so there's still sources of e-brain charges.
Yes, I focused on the hypercharge flux because it's past the whole instruction cycle.
Well, let's pretend you didn't have hypercharge flux.
Yeah.
You've got brain guts somehow else, something else like this. You still have the same kind of thing.
Yes.
So even in the presence of hypercharged flux, you have some tadpoles from this direction, but also from this direction.
Yeah.
And you say that you can completely understand these in terms of the fact that wool volume theory is coupling the closed string fields through these strings.
I don't want to use the word completely. But
this is the idea. You have a direct coupling of open and closed string between the three hits.
Yeah, and it's all the diagram. In fact, the open string one loop is the closed string tree. And so for the open string divergence is two.
The number is
go away. The divergence is and then that says okay, so I think this is an interesting property of moduli and threshold corrections. And it gives something which is basically you wouldn't expect from an effective field theory point. And maybe it could be important in terms of interpreting what's actually meant by the gut scale in string theory. But at this point, I think I've taken up enough of a good time. So I'll answer any questions, but I'll wrap up.